Hello, guys, and welcome to another Total Football Analysis Magazine podcast. I'm your host once again, Chris Darwin, and I'm joined today by our first head coach in this series of podcasts. As you know, if you've been following us, we've been speaking to performance analysts so far, so it's great to have the opportunity to speak to somebody on the other side of the fence. And that person is none other than El Calciatore, who is the head coach of North East United of the Indian Super League. Now, Elko's just led the club to the playoffs for the first time in the club's history, and he's done it with one of the smallest budgets in the league. And straight away, that says to me that there must be something going on there where Elko is able to find that marginal gain and do something a little bit differently to a lot of the clubs in the Indian Super League. So, Elko, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you. It's great to have you. Great to have you on the podcast. It's one that I've been looking forward to doing. Now, as I said, you're the first head coach that we've had on the podcast because it's still quite a new series, and I'm very keen to hear your views on tactical analysis and how and when you use it in your working week with sort of North East United. So it's great to hear from you. Now, please tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and how you've ended up in India.
In a nutshell, I'm from Holland. That's first. I'm 47 years old. Started my coaching career very young. Ended my active career due to personal reasons, meaning, and it's a bit personal, where my mother committed suicide, and that put a big spell on my own career. I was a very talented player, but had a short break from football, came back in coaching, did that in Holland for about 11 years with the club VV Venlo. They are in the highest division. Then a colleague of mine, he went to the Middle East and I wanted something different. I asked if I could join him. I joined him for 4 years as an assistant. After he left to Australia, where I actually in the meantime met my wife, who is from Egypt, stayed for a long time in Middle East, been all over in all the countries in Middle East, had a short break in Africa where I worked for Red Bull Salzburg, who had an academy in Ghana where I was the head coach. Then went back again to Middle East, went to India, and where I now I'm busy for the second time, actually, sorry, third time. Last year, I came back to India together with Avram Grant, who was the former coach of Chelsea, who was appointed as head coach of North East United. He didn't have any experience in India, and we have the same agent. They asked me if I could join him. Of course, never worked with a really big coach like that. I joined him, finished the season. He didn't want to continue, and they asked me to become the head coach of North East United, and that's what we did. I led the club this season to their first ever playoffs, as you said, with the smallest budget. And here we are. We just finished. I still have one game to go. It's a cup game, and that's about in 2 weeks, and then we finish the season.
Fantastic. And it has been a historic season for the club in Indian Super League. And for the listeners that we got that don't follow the Indian Super League sort of quite closely, North East have typically been one of the teams that you wouldn't expect to make the playoffs. So to be able to do what you've done this year is absolutely phenomenal. Now, I'm really interested now then, Elko, to find out more about how analysis and tactical analysis, data analysis, all of it has fitted into your working week this season and whether it's played a part in that success.
Analysis is actually one of my favorite parts of coaching. Except, of course, dealing with people, getting them to a higher level. But to analyze the opponent, to analyze your own team, put those two together and how to find the weakness and exploit that weakness is something that I really like to do. That means in most coaches, they have like somebody's with them, as you said, maybe a performance analyst or a guy who does the match analysis for him, for the coach, for the head coach. I don't do that. I do everything myself, meaning I have a video guy with me in the team who provides me with three games from the opponent from the last weeks. And then I'm going to look at these games and to analyze them and find the weaknesses. I cut them down to, of course, like anyone does, the defensive part, the offensive part. Set pieces I keep to my assistant. He's more specifically organized in that. And to be honest, I also don't like to do that. It doesn't have my preference. But to analyze the opponent, I do all myself. I even do the presentation on the before the day before the match. I give them all the players an analysis about the strengths and weaknesses of the team, and the day after we make that a little bit smaller to give some reminders. But as I said, I do all that myself, and I think, of course, I cannot be 100% sure, but I think, like, for instance, if you look at Guardiola, I think he's a huge, huge example for me, who was his teacher, was Johan Cruyff. I am from Holland. Is specifically, they look always for the weakness of the opponent. And I read a few days ago in some tweet it was where Guardiola said, I love to smash the opponent and find their weaknesses and dig into games and see where I can exploit their weaknesses. And that is something I love to do. And yeah, which details, which things you're looking for. Yeah, we can go into that, what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit in a nutshell.
Perfect. Now that fits into really exactly what I'm hoping to get out of this podcast for the listeners. So I want to talk to you about your pre-match sort of analytical routine and exactly as you say, sort of things that you are looking for. But if it's okay with you, I'd like to really drill down on, you give me an example of what you felt was your biggest tactical win this season in the ISL against one of the sides where North East weren't expected to get a result. And you managed to, as you say, identify the weakness and get the players to expose that weakness. And you come away with the win or the result that you were wanting.
See, there are, you have to see, like, I made in the beginning of the season, I made in an interview, I said, you cannot turn a Mini Cooper into a Ferrari, meaning that, yeah, you have to do with the qualities that you have. You have to try to fit them into a team that wants to work together and that still somehow can compete with better teams. One thing I do not like is to sit back, to hang back, to play just purely defensive. That means I try to dominate, but you have to be realistic. I mean, you cannot. I have certain players who don't have the technical qualities to outplay their opponent in a way. Yeah, I'm just taking as a simple example. Messi has that high of an ability to outplay his opponent. So I think that makes sense what I'm saying. Like you just have to be realistic with the qualities you have. That means how you want to dominate. Then I work a lot as a coach on rotations. That means that, and the easiest way to compare it or to understand it is if you every day from your home drive to your work, if you do that day in, day out, you will know at a certain point without looking where the speed bumps are, where you have to slow down, where you have to speed up, where the danger is. You do that almost without looking. It's an automatism. Now, that's how I try to train with my team offensively and defensively certain rotations. And yeah, they seem to work because the players, they know from each other what to do. Now, that part you have to mirror towards an opponent team. So the starting point for me always is, what is the formation of the opponent team? Mm. That means, is it a 4-3-3, is it a 5-3-2? Because 50% of any game on any level is, you look at your formation, your organization, and you look at the formation from the opponent team. You put them together, and then you will see, and it's difficult to not have a picture in front of you, but basically, let's say that an opponent team plays a 4-4-2 diamond formation. And my teams, most of the time, not always, but most of the time, because I have a preference there, play 4-3-3. That means for sure that my wingbacks, so I think you call it in English also wingbacks, so the right and the left back, fullbacks, I think you say in English, right? They will be more free. They have more time to do the build-up. So that means that has consequences for the way you do your build-up. The second part and that is more defensively from our side, is, and I go back again, 50% of any game is organization. That means who is responsible for who. That means the moment, and a very good example, yesterday Holland played against Germany. I didn't see that game, but I saw that game today. I went on Y Scout and I wanted to see the game. Now, the first half, Germany tactically completely outplayed Holland because Holland did not know what to do with the formation of Germany. Germany played a 5-2-3 formation and Holland was playing a 4-3-3 formation. And they had no grip and they came 2-0 behind. In halftime, yeah, it was clear to me that Koeman, the head coach of Holland, made his changes and he almost duplicated. He also started playing with a 5-back line, but he put 3 on the midfield. That means 2 holding and 1 behind the striker and 2 strikers. And the game completely changed. And you have to see, if you put the two formations together, like where are our, how do you call it? Where are the weakness and strength? And again, to use an analysis, or as I said before, that if you drive from your work to your home, it becomes automatically. But let's say now you are go to a complete new place where you've never been before, and you have to drive from one side to the city to the other side. You still can drive car, same like you did from your home to your work, but suddenly you have to start looking, you have to start searching. And that's how I always try to compare also to players, to explain to them that when there is a different formation or inside the game something happens, you need to right away find and understand who stays responsible for who needs to press on which player, who needs to follow which player. This is 50% of any game. And a coach who has a good understanding of that is already 50% halfway to get a result.
Okay, now that makes a lot of sense. And thank you for explaining it so clearly. So when you're working on your preferred formation and then the rotations that you're looking to implement in there, how long does that take then I'm going to say a normal team, and I hope you understand what I mean by a normal team.
Yeah.
So just a team. How long would that take then for those rotations to become habit that they're not looking at the road anymore?
Yeah, simply, of course, all really depends on the quality, the ability of the player. But overall, I always have 2.5 months till 3 months. Suddenly you see something clicks and you will have that in a training or in a game. And that as I said, everything is about repeating. I do a lot. Video analysis with players. That means after every game, even training, you sit with players and you keep highlighting what are the most important points. And then most on average, it's 2.5 to 3 months. And then you see it. You know, okay, this was they start understanding it, and that is one of the most beautiful things as a coach, that you feel okay, they got now what I want them to how to call it to show and 3 months.
Okay, so then do you find then that over the course of a season that your emphasis on different parts of analysis then they must change as the season goes on, because if the team is starting to understand the rotations and that they now understand that they've become habit, I'm guessing less time has to go into talking about them. So does that free up more time then to look at the opposition in more detail, or is it always always able to have that the right balance?
No, absolutely. I mean, I have an assistant coach from Australia. This is the first time he's working with me. And in the beginning, he was making remarks towards me because we evaluate, we look at where can we do things better, what can be improved. And one of the things he said after the first 2-3 meetings, he said, "Their meetings are pretty long, Ilko." I said, "Yeah, you're right." He said, "But," and I'm talking about video meetings. I said, "Look, normally, 10, 15 minutes, players have the attention attention span. But I always try to make my presentations as, how do you say that in English, as visual as possible." But I said, a long time, after 2-3 months, you will see those meetings reduced to less information. Because in the beginning, if you watch a commercial over and over and over again, it will stick in your head. And that's also how I do my meetings in the beginning, they are a little bit longer, and I repeat a lot of things where the principle of the thing that you want to improve is the same, but it can be a different situation in the game. Yeah, it's a different video, but the principles are always the same. And if you keep repeating that enough, and you see it, as I said, you see it when players, and I even mentioned that sometimes in the meeting to the players, I know it's annoying, said, but we're going to repeat it again. And at a certain point, when they understand it, then you drop certain information and you move on to the next thing that you want to implement.
Yeah, no, of course, of course. So in that build-up then to a match, let's move into using a game example. Let's say Benga, the playoff semi-final that recently you had. So how much time, give or take, you don't have to give me the exact amount of time, but how much time did you spend then analysing your opponent in preparation for that semi-final?
The thing is, because Bangalore, we already played twice this season, so I will go back to, if I didn't see a team before, then I will at least 4 to 5 hours spend on watching videos. The thing is, because my presentations, I all make them myself, they cost a lot of time. That means because I want to be as visual as possible and I want players as much engaged as possible. So it's not a boring presentation where you put papers on the wall and you write something down. No, I use with animations, etc. And that costs a lot of time. So in total, for sure, I will be on average 7 to 8 hours a week only on making the presentation and also analyzing the games. So that is a lot of time. The problem is, especially like in the league that we play, sometimes you have games on a very short time in between. So you have to work a little bit ahead. Although I don't like that too much, because I like to focus on one thing, get it right, and then move to the next one. That is not always easy. But on average, 7 to 8 hours a week on on analyzing and preparing the presentation.
Okay, so then going into that semi-final, as you say, you played Bengaluru twice already in the season. So you're going to have some idea, obviously, of what you're up against.
Absolutely.
The first result of the semi-final was a bit of a shock. I mean, people weren't expecting Northeast to be going into the second leg ahead. So what did you do? What were you looking for in there? And then what was implemented?
All right, I will try to paint the picture. Bangalore is has the strength. If you look at their team, they are physically strong. They have a lot of length, and they also have like a physical appearance. Like in every 1v1, they are just physically, as in body wise, stronger than us. Secondly, they have a really well organized set pieces, but defensive, they're not. I mean, they have a decent build-up and they have some patterns, but not too much. Clearly, their left side, their left center back, was way less in the build-up, and their Indian top scorer, who plays on the left wing, he is very dangerous inside the box, but outside the box, whenever he has the ball, he doesn't have a strong dribble. If you have to play a one against one, where you can be, as I told my right wing back, the moment he gets the ball, be very aggressive with him, and from these areas. So on their left side, we can put in a lot of counter attacks. That is one part that worked pretty well. Second, their defensive organization is like almost very extreme to one side of. So let's say we build up on our right wing, then their whole team. Like any defense organization, you go with your whole team. I don't know what the English word is. Everybody moves over to one side and tries to.
Everyone shuffles.
Exactly. So everyone shuffles, but they are doing that extremely. They're doing that too much. So that means. The opposite side is pretty open. So the second part, what I was looking for is within, as quick as possible, we look for the cross pass and find our opposite wing player. That worked a few times. But again, there you depend on qualities of the players. I mean, I can ask from the players to play a cross pass to the other side, but if he doesn't have that quality, it makes it more difficult. The key point, and this is something where we actually controlled the whole game in the first game. The other two games we played in the league against them was similar, but we couldn't convert our chances. But as I said, the third point, I played with inverted wingbacks. If you know, like Guardiola plays with Man City when he introduced this, where, let's say, my right wingback has the ball. He plays it to the holding midfielder wide, and I want my opposite wingback come to the midfield, and my midfielder plays deeper. And they didn't have an answer on that. And we controlled the game that we were dominating. But again, we created a lot of chances. And within my team, and then I go back to the qualities that you have. We have the lowest budget. I have, through the whole season, I have only three players that scored the goals. And from those three, I have only one who gave some assist. So you're pretty... Yeah, you don't have much. The amount of chances that we created this season all over was a lot. But in the end, yeah, you need certain quality to finish it. But the tactic to play with inverted wingbacks, that worked fantastic against them because they didn't have an answer to that. Why I did this? Because their opposite winger always tried to press on our center back. So okay. the moment our opposite wingback goes inside, I let my opposite winger drop in, and yeah, you have to paint that picture. Then you can see that it creates confusion for the opponent team, and that worked very well. Unfortunately, at halftime, just before halftime, I lost and my top scorer with a hamstring injury, and my only scoring Indian midfielder, also had an injury, and that also broke us in the second game, where we had to play without them, and yeah, we couldn't. It's just too much for us. I don't have good replacement there.
Yeah. Okay. So that sounds like a very interesting sort of tactical plan that you had. And what I like about that is that it shows and demonstrates to our listeners the things that you've identified in the build up to the game, and then that you then being able to put in a plan. Now, how different was that tactical plan to anything that you tried already that season?
There is, for instance, we had a few games before that we had to play against FC Pune. They got a new coach. You probably know him, Phil Brown. He's from the UK. And he changed their team to a 5-3-2 formation. And almost all teams in the league play 4-2-3-1. So basically, you get used to certain styles you play against, and then suddenly a new coach comes, he changed the whole system, and then you have to adapt, especially players who are not used to play against that system. You have to do something different. And yeah, Pune made a really good run. They were, the moment they kicked out their coach, they were before last, they brought the new coach, and he started winning, draw, winning. And a lot had to do with that formation. It's not just only the formation, but if all teams within a league almost always play the same system, the same formation, then you get used to a certain style and you don't have surprises. But then suddenly somebody plays a complete different system. Yeah, then as I said in the beginning, 50% of any game is organization. That means you need to know who is responsible for who. And that was an issue. So I had to, when I was analyzing that team, I had to come up with a different strategy on how to press against them. And how to do our own build-up. And yeah, that's a completely different picture. Where I said if they play with five in the back, three on the midfield, and two up front, and we have a 4-3-3, again, if you try to picture that in front of you, then again you have on your wings a lot of space, and it has consequences for you have to try to drag him out because they have five in the back line. How to do that is a little bit difficult to explain in words, to be honest, but as I said, that game specifically, I had to come up with a different strategy that we didn't do the whole season.
So when you're then putting this new strategy into place, What's your process then for explaining?
Yeah, see, that is one of the things that me as a coach learned along the way. I'm more convinced. Look, you of course you're gonna do things on the training field. You cannot just go into a game watching a video and go let's go and play. But what I learned is that players basically learn more from seeing actually on a video. I make illustrations also, where you do step-by-step explanations. They learn more from that than while you are in a training and try to, and I call that situational coaching. For instance, you're playing a possession game or you play 11 against 11 and you say, stop, you have to be there. I also do that, but I always do that after, first I show the players where the weaknesses are, where the strengths are for the opponent team. But mostly based on the organizational part. As I said, those 50%, who is responsible for who, where are the spaces?
And why do you think players learn like that? Okay, why? Because that isn't something that I would have been used to personally. So why do you think players are picking up information better that way than being out on the pitch doing it?
Actually, the moment when I start noticing that the players pick up more from that, you start thinking, okay, why is that? So you start analyzing that. Yeah, and it's actually not so difficult. Let's say you are inside a swimming pool and there are, I just say something, say a number, there are 20 people, and you have to find one specific person. You have to start looking around. When you look in front of you, he's maybe behind you. If you look behind you, he's maybe on the other side. If you step outside the pool, above the pool, and you have a look from above, you will easily pick that guy out that you were looking for. With a video, it's in generally the similar idea. You look from away, you see the whole picture. And then the key is, and that's why I do first the video, and then I go to the field. Then you connect those dots that the guy see in the video, and they easier understand it, they easier can translate it. Because in the field, and again, also this, of course, depends on the quality of the players, the ability to, I mean, if you have a lot of experience, if you're, the higher you play, the better that computer in your brain is working. But as I said, the moment you do a training first, you try to, as a coach, to show them, go here, go there, you have to mark this one. It works. But my experience is, if you do the other way around, it works better because you go from a big picture. And then you step into that picture, and then it's easier to link things. At least that's my experience.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. So then you've got the tactical plan in place. You've trained it through the videos, and then on the training field, and you're now in the match. What are the sort of things you're looking for immediately, and then what's your process?
Yeah, the thing is, in anywhere I worked, the first 15 minutes are always crucial, especially, for instance, there's a big difference when you, let's say, an opening game of any season or take any opening game of a tournament. You always see on the World Cup, the Euro Cup, any tournament, the first game is always, everybody's tense, everybody doesn't know what to expect, even if you pointed out for in your analysis before the game. It's just a complete different how to call that? It's more a mental part. Who has the quickest, his nerves under control, who has the quickest way to see, okay, what's happening. But overall, that is almost in every game, the first 15 minutes, it's important to settle down. Now, the first thing I do is the moment the game starts, or even when the kickoff, before the kickoff, I try right away to see if the formation that we predicted is there. And also the players that like the specific qualities of the players on the specific positions, if they're matching. That's the first thing I do. And I always have a connection with my captain. Said, yeah, all right, everything is as we thought it would be. The moment the game starts, the first thing that I start to look at is who is actually not doing his job, or who is doing something different than we agreed on. And most of the time that works. But sometimes, yeah, you have a player who has a day off, as in he's just not there. And what the reason might be, you don't know. Yeah. That is not explainable. That's part of football. And then, yeah, you have to react. And as a coach, that is always difficult because you don't have the chance to just explain to players. You can shout something from the side, but while they're playing, they don't have the, like, you cannot stop the game and say, listen, you're doing this and this wrong. So you find moments to correct these things. But I look specifically, as I said, first, if the organization towards their organization is correct, is it working? And if it's not working, then, yeah, with that is sometimes, that is, I think, the most difficult part of coaching, that you right away need to know what is the solution. Or why is it happening? And that is something, yeah, I think that is experience, that you recognize certain patterns that occur. Because basically, if in 20 years time, I'm already for 27 years coaching, if a certain system plays against a certain system, then you almost know where will problems could occur. Or if certain qualities of one player against qualities of the opponent team, you also can almost predict what might happen. So you look for these things, and as the moment the stability is there, then all fine. But if the stability is not there, yeah, you have to try to find solution. But that is, as I said, that's the most difficult part of coaching, because you cannot right away communicate it to the players.
Okay, so and you're on the touchline while this is happening. Do you have anyone within your staff who is higher up and getting a different view of the game, or is this all coming through your own hands?
Unfortunately, I didn't reach that level yet. But I have to say, because this is something that is an interesting part, in my opinion, you can have, I think if you work for years with somebody, you can call him an analyst who is on the stands and looks at the game, or an assistant coach, whatever you want to call it. If you work for years, you will start to understand each other. It means this guy, yeah, will start understanding what I'm seeing. I never been in that situation. I also have a big question mark in any club where I go, where they already have an analyst. I will, the first question I will ask him is, say, first explain to me, how do you see football? What, because everybody has a certain bias in the way football should play it. And then you try to see what is he seeing. But most of the things I just do myself. It would be a great help, but again, to find somebody who sees what you see is not easy.
That's a really interesting point, and that's something that's come up on a couple of our podcasts so far, is around that trust element, because it's obviously, yeah, important, because you've got seconds sometimes to make decisions and make changes. You haven't got time to have a discussion over who's right and who's wrong. So you're going to, yeah, need that trust element. I believe guys that I've spoken to think that as time goes on, you will find that the analyst becomes a lot more of that coaching staff that moves around to different clubs. Whereas at the moment, you find that the analyst stays at the club, a new coach comes in. The analyst stays at the club, a new coach comes in. But because of that trust element, there'll be more of a package, right? Obviously, the coach, the goalkeeping coach, the fitness coach, and a performance analyst as part of that trust circle.
Yeah, it's a really difficult thing, because I also, like any staff I worked with, in the beginning of my career, you want to do everything yourself, and that is logic. Especially Dutch people, they think they know everything, they have an opinion about everything. Yeah. They think they invented the football. It's just part of our nature. There are a lot of good things that Dutch people have, or Dutch coaches have. But at the same time, I'm also that realistic and honest to say, sometimes they also think they know too much. Mm. So what I learned from that part is that if you work with people, you give them a responsibility. And if you give that responsibility, let them do the way they want to do it. I will make small corrections only where I think maybe it's needed, if it's too far off on the way I want it. But overall, I want people to give a responsibility and give them the freedom. When it comes to analyzing, it is extremely, extremely interesting to speak to somebody who looks at the game and brings in certain views on the way he watched the game. But within within two, three conversation, I will know, okay, this is something that could be an addition for me, or this is somebody that looks totally different at football, or doesn't see details that I want to see. So as I said, that's really a difficult part to find somebody that really sees it the way you see it. It's a matter of you need to work long time with each other to know your dynamics, to know the things that you're looking at. So I found it. I wish I had one, because it makes your work easier, and you can be less. Because during a game you are emotional, you have to stay objective, and if you have somebody from the outside who watches for you and has a similar view like you, yeah, that makes things easier. That is logic.
Yeah, sure. So we're still in the game. We're still in the game, yeah. and you're analysing things that go on. Now,
yeah.
I've always been fascinated by this, because during the game you might see something that isn't quite right. How many times do you have to see it not be quite right during the course of the game before you go, I need to change this? Because I'm guessing the first time it's not quite right, that just might be an error, a mistake. That's not truth. That's just one time. Is it the second time? Is it the third time? Is it the fourth time? When do you go, okay, this now needs to be fixed?
Yeah, there are moments that I remember that even after one time I would change, but that will only happen if I already beforehand predicted it or had a feeling that is going to happen. And I'm looking more specifically at, maybe you have to play, let's say you have an injury, you have to bring in a player that just have less qualities, and you want to give him a chance. And let's say we play a four back line, and one of the center backs is injured. I have to bring a new center back, but his quality is not that great. Meaning, I just give a simple example. He is bad if they run over him, deep runs. He's not good in covering that. Then you already, because you know his quality, and the moment the game starts, and after the first ball, they surprise him, then you already know, okay. And mostly what I do in these moments, I already said in the meetings that if we have issues, if we have problems, because I'm very straightforward with my players about these things, we'll go to a five back line. I just say something. And then there are moments where I remember where I think, okay, this is a too big of risk. I give it a chance. But the moment in the first possible option where it goes wrong, I already have the plan B ready. But in general, certain tactical things on an average of three to four times. If something occurs, then that's time to change.
Okay. So tell me what happens in your changing room at halftime then, Elko. And it can be whether the game's going well, the game's going not so well. How do you address halftime?
First thing I do always is give a little bit of time to themselves. The first question I always ask is, anyone injured? Anyone has issues? Then the second part is, either I discuss with my captain just before walking in if he had any issues that he experienced, because it's possible he felt something in the way they were playing that that I didn't see, that is possible. So I have a very short, quick, but most of the time we're on the same line there. And then I will start addressing the problems that I saw. And again, because you have a short time, I try to always make it as visual as possible. Till now, I'm pretty skillful in using a tactical board. That means you do the magnets on the board. But yeah, there are clubs where I saw before where they already have video analysis. And yeah, that is, of course, top. And then you go back again to somebody who does live tagging during the game. I know that I had a conversation with an assistant, a friend of mine who's assistant. He does actually live tagging. So the head coach during the game already says, hey, I want this moment. I want this moment. Yeah. So that, yes, I mean, these things are on a top level. I would love to work with that once, because that also make things easier. But overall, I use a tactical board. But the first thing I address is the organization. I go always back to that, because I keep repeating that. It's 50% of any game. You can easily win, play a very bad game, but I'm talking more about, you don't create much chances. But as long as everybody knows who's responsible for who and put in an effort of work, 50% you have in your pocket. So I always start with that. And then I will start speaking about specifics defensively, where we lack, and offensively, where we maybe should take advantage. Because I might have seen something during the game where I say, hey, there is a weakness there. We need to take advantage of that. And then I always end with the question to the players themselves, if they understood it, and if there are any issues they want to address. But all this has to be in a short time span. Yeah. So you learn to be creative with that. Like what are the priorities and where, what you have to prioritize.
No, of course that makes sense. And then after the game, Danelko, what's the process there? Then is there much of a debrief straight after the game, or is that then held to the next training session?
9 out of 10 times to the next training session. I am somebody, I don't like to even the day after the game do right away the analysis, because in my opinion, and I don't know if that's for everybody, but I think it's for most people, anything emotional that you go through, and football game is an emotional thing, you will not right away see things clearly. So sometimes you just need 1-2 day to gather your thoughts. I want to see the video first, and sometimes it could be the first day, but most of the time it's the second day after the game where I do the analysis, the post-match analysis.
And how much time do you spend on analyzing the game that's just happened then?
I try about 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, but that can sometimes go longer because you get into discussions with players, as in because it needs to be explained. But again, I use video there. For instance, a big part of my philosophy is I want to play ball possession game. So a big part is, and I always start with that, is the easy mistakes we made, as in where we lose really easy balls. So I put those clips together. Then most of the time I will first go to the defense organization, and then I finish with the attacking part. And yeah, that is... look, in basically, the way I analyze the game is you can chunk it down to two easy points. One is, how many chances did we create? And I'm talking about really... 90 to 100% scoring chances.
Yes.
And how many chances did we get against us from the opponent? From that, I work backwards. Okay. If you created a lot of chances, that means you did something well, because in the end, to score in football is not easy. If it would be that easy, if there would be a formula for that, then I would be rich. but overall, if you create a lot of chances, then... From there, I look at, okay, we created them, but what went wrong? Is it the quality? Is it the positioning? Is it the timing? And I do the same with the defense part. Those two key points I take, and I also take the clips mostly from that, and I work backwards. And from those, I try backwards, like where did we go wrong? Or why did the opponent create those chances? Was that because we put wrong pressure on the ball? Were that simply really stupid mistakes from ourselves? Was it a mistake in the organization? There are so many angles you can look at it. That is just what the coach, the way I analyze, the way I see things.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Now, Albert, you've talked a lot about video analysis there. Where does the data and the statistics that come out of games, do they factor into things that you're looking at?
That's a hot one. There are statistics for sure that you can use, but till today I am still looking for, okay, what are the things that you, if you take stats, for instance, there are stats like how many passes you had in the game, the amount of meters that each player run. There are so many things, information that can be measured. But in the end, I try to look what in football is effective, what actually influence your process, what actually influence either you create those chances or you get those chances against you. And to filter that to a few key points is very difficult, to be honest with. Sometimes certain information really matters. Like, for instance, the amount of meters run for each player can matter. It can make a difference. For instance, if you play against a team that is outplaying you, that is really good in ball possession, then it means either you really organize, you have to put in a little bit more effort to cover spaces, to close gaps. But in other games, it totally doesn't matter. So it's difficult. I find that still a very interesting point to look at.
Yeah. No, that makes sense, because it's all about the context of the data and the statistics, and no two games are exactly the same. So
yes,
as I say, it's almost impossible to compare at times.
See, okay. Because you're English. English philosophy overall, as in from back in the days, was many times looked at. Okay, we don't need a build up. We play as quick as possible into the box, and we'll see what happens there. Dutch philosophy, same like Spanish, try to play passing from behind. Either you call it tiki taki or not. Now it is very interesting that sometimes coaches who have a bias or a preference to play quicker or long ball will say, yeah, but there's a lot of possession in an own half. I would say, yeah, you played now 10 times the ball to the front, but 10 times you don't keep the ball. So what I want to say, in both statistics, if you would look at both, there is some truth to it, but it doesn't always really paint the picture. So you have to be really specific in, okay, like somebody who likes possession-based football will really criticize quickly that long ball. While, for instance, if I look at, I'm not a Mourinho fan, for instance, but I do know that the moment something needs to happen, he has this strategy where he plays this diagonal ball to a tall guy, and then somebody comes running in, and yeah, that is effective if you really look at it. Right. So, as I said, those stats, or those ways of approaching a game, yeah, you have to be critical at yourself and see what is effective and be honest about it.
Okay. No, that's a good way of looking at it. Now I want to then, just for this last bit of today's podcast, I want to talk a little bit about scouting for players. Now, I don't know how much influence you have over the recruitment of the squad that you're working with this season, but in general, when you're scouting for players, where does analysis fit into that for you?
See, scouting, yeah, it doesn't matter either. But it doesn't matter what job you do. Recruitment is the first part of any job. Choosing the right person for the right job is no different with football. I found it extreme. I got, for instance, this season, and it's one thing I'm not don't want to be arrogant, but I have a really good feeling for is to put a player, to use a player, and use him with his qualities. I have, for instance, a player in my team who for the last 3 years didn't do anything, and this year he suddenly starts scoring, and he got a lot of positive attention in the news, and they were asking like, how is it possible? In my opinion, you have to, yeah, it's a no-brainer, but at the same time you need to see it. You need to use people's qualities. And to go back to that player, what I was just talking about, this guy has a lot of dynamics. Meaning he likes to go forward. He was all those years in all those teams, he was always playing as a holding midfielder. So one of the first questions I always ask any player in any team is, I always have a few questions that I start before the season. Is that, if you are the coach, what is your favorite position and in which system? That already tells me a little bit on, and I say, forget about, you can choose. You can really, in your heart, where is your preferable position? Then the second question would be, okay, what do you think is your best qualities? And both things I write down. Then you start training with players, and you start sometimes seeing that a player is overestimating himself, or he's right. And I'm taking that from my point of view. But the thing is, for instance, in and I'm going back again to this midfielder that will start scoring goals. I put him in the 4-3-3 as an attacking midfielder because he likes to go forward. And while we were training, and when you play small side games, you can see when any player in small side games who scores a lot means he has scoring ability. Then the next step is, okay, how do we get him into scoring abilities? And this guy, and you start looking at the videos, the amount of times that he showed up into the box on the right moment, on the right time, but he didn't get the pass. And that's what you have to see, because you not only look at the result of something, but you also can, when somebody showing up on the right time, but he doesn't get the pass, or the guy is too late with the pass. These things, as a coach, I found extremely interesting when you look at scouting, when you look at quality players. But in the end, you can look at a lot of technical, physical, and tactical qualities. So reading the game, in the end, the mental part is the most important. So I can see a fantastic player. And I go back to what's his name, I hate this guy, to be honest, this Balotelli. So much talent, but mentality is shit. And each coach tries to think, no, I will change him. No, in the end, mentality is always the starting point for me. If he doesn't have the right attitude, wanting to learn, wanting to improve, working hard, that is always the starting point for me. And then you work backwards to, as I said, you try to identify what is really his football quality.
So how long would you then spend scouting a player? So let's stay with this this example of your midfielder that you've spoken about there. So he's already he's in your mind for some reason. But how long will you spend trying to see whether your hunch is right or wrong?
To be honest, that I see pretty quickly. I prefer, you see things in training. But in training, always the intensity and the tempo is lower. But within one or two games, you see, I myself was a very attacking player. I was a winger. I had a lot of skills. If you want to analyze somebody else, I always say, look at yourself. If you recognize things in yourself, you start seeing them in other people. So for me to analyze a defender is more difficult than for me to analyze an attacker or a midfielder, because I have both similar qualities, or you see things. That's why, for instance, if I in the future, I would love to have somebody, I just take a simple example, a good defender who was in Holland, Jaap Stam or Frank de Boer. You would like that type of person have as an assistant. Why? Because you want to learn also on the defensive part. But for me to recognize that, certain qualities, and I'm talking mostly about offensive qualities, within one, two games, you can see, you can almost be sure, like, hey, he has what I'm looking for. But that is not something that that is, of course, 100% sure. Because in the end, and I go back again to the mentality, for instance, the club brought in the winter break, brought a player from Greece, who is also a winger, has fantastic qualities, but he played 6 games, no goals, no assists. And the club was like, oh, fantastic, had a lot of movement. But I could see from the moment he arrived, the first, and they brought him without me knowing, when they brought him, after the first meeting I had with him, his attitude. The way he answers, there was always a but. Yeah, but. There was always a but. And then I already know that it's not somebody who wants to learn. That is not somebody. And you look then also at his view, as his, how do you call it, as his background. So for me, first, look at the character, and then I work backwards. And how long that takes. Overall, the qualities I can see. But in the end, for instance, I have a few talents this year. I had 2 boys who came from a pretty small club, who had to make this, made a step to the highest league, the ISL, is a big step, but both played almost all games. So I made that decision pretty quick into the preseason.
Okay, that's fair. And again, we have to go back to what an achievement it was this season, getting the club to the playoffs for the first time with the smallest budget. And one thing I've picked up from watching ISL for the last 2 seasons quite closely is that it's all very well going out and bringing in the big superstar names and this, that and the other. But it's the teams, as you say, are organised. The teams that have players that are prepared to put the work in and that side of it, that do often overcome those sides. And it was great to see you guys finishing in the top 4. Now, what's next for you then, Elko? Are you there next season, or what's happening?
I still have a contract for next season, but overall, I wish, because this club also is, I mean, in the last 4 years, so this is the fifth year, the last 4 years, they never qualified, a lot of problems, a lot of people left this club. There are things where I say they really need to improve this, and also that depends on if I want to stay or not, and yeah. There are a lot of things where I say that really needs to improve. Let's keep it with that.
Fair enough. Well, you clearly done something special there, and it would be good for the club to be good for the club and the fans, I'm sure, if you are there next season. But football's football, and you never really know what's around the next corner. So
exactly, everybody has his.
For your time this evening. It's been a really good conversation. And as I said at the start, it's great to hear things from the head coach's point of view, because at the end of the day, you're the guy making the decisions, and it's great to see and learn about your analysis sort of process there. So thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thank you also. It was an honor. I wish, because as I said, I go back to what I said before, is it's always easier and better if you can visualize something, because that also make for audience better to understand. I hope that I explained it in the best possible way, because in the end you need to see that picture. But I like these things anytime. If you have another subject, I'll be willing to come back, because I like football. I can talk about all day long.
Well, brilliant. Me as well. Next time you're back in Europe, we'll have to find a time where we can be in the same place at the same time and actually put ourselves on video, and you can show some of the visualizations outside of it as well, which would be super.
Fantastic. We'll do that.
Great stuff. Well, look, guys, that brings us to the end of today's Total Football Analysis Magazine podcast. It's been great to spend some time talking to Elko Shatori there and getting his insights and everything. We will be back very soon with either another interview with somebody within the professional game, or we'll be looking at some of the tactical talking points of recent times in football. As I always say at the end of this podcast, if you haven't picked up a copy of the magazine yet, you really should, especially if it's March's, because it's our best one yet. But it won't be long before we're in April and there'll be a new magazine on the market. So we will be back very, very soon. My name's been Chris Darwin. This has been the Total Football Analysis Magazine podcast.
Hi folks, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you're still listening now, I think we can agree you might have done. If you want to get even more tactical analysis from us, you want to head over to totalfootballanalysis.com. Over there, you can get over 100 pieces of written analysis a month for as little as £2, as well as taking out an annual subscription to our monthly digital magazine. And because we like you, we are offering 10% off all subscriptions to Total Football Analysis magazine if you use the discount code PODCAST at checkout. That's podcast, you use it at the checkout, and that will mean you get 12 months of website and magazine for just £45. That's a good deal, folks. I would cash in on that if I were you.